So we're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 19, Text 31. The chapter is headed The Appearance of Sukadev Goswami. Text 31. Prashantam asinam akuntamedasam. Munim nipo bhagavato pyupetya. Panamya murdanavahita kirtanjali. Nadva gira sunritayan vakrikchat. Prashantam asinam akuntam edasam. Munim nripo bhagavato pyupetya. Pranamya murdhana vita kritanjali. Nadva gira sunrit. Tayan na prichat. Prashantam. Perfectly pacified. Asinam. Sitting. Akunta. Without hesitation. Medasam. One who has sufficient intelligence. Munim, unto the great sage. Nripa, the king, Maharaj Parikshit. Bhagavata, the great devotee. Abhyut Peta, approaching him. Pranamya, bowing down. Murdhan, his head. Avita, properly. Krita Asanjali, his folded hands. Natva, politely. Gira, by words. Suntaya, in sweet voices. Anva Prachat, inquired. Translation. The sage Sukadev Goswami sat perfectly pacified, intelligent and ready to answer any question without hesitation. The great devotee, Maharaj Parikshit, approached him, offered his respects by bowing down before him, and politely inquired with sweet words and folded hands. Translation responsibly. The great sage Sukadev Goswami sat perfectly pacified, intelligent and ready to answer any question without hesitation. The great devotee, Maharaj Parikshit, approached him, offered his respects by bowing down before him, and politely inquired with sweet words and folded hands. Purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. The gesture now adopted by Maharaj Parikshit of questioning a master is quite befitting in terms of spiritual injunction, scriptural injunction. The scriptural injunction is that one should humbly approach a spiritual master to understand the transcendental science. Maharaj Parikshit was now prepared for meeting his death, and within the very short time of 7 days, he was to know the process of entering the kingdom of God. In such important cases, one is required to approach a spiritual master. There is no necessity of approaching a spiritual master unless one is in need of solving the problems of life. One who does not know how to put questions before a spiritual master has no business seeing him. And the qualification of a spiritual master is perfectly manifest in the person of Sukadeva Goswami. Both the spiritual master and the disciple, namely Sukadeva Goswami, namely Sukadeva Goswami and Maharaj Parikshit, attained perfection through the medium of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Sukadeva Goswami learned Srimad Bhagavatam from his father, Vyasadeva, and he had no chance to recite it. Before Maharaj Parikshit, he recited Srimad Bhagavatam and answered the questions of Maharaj Parikshit unhesitatingly, and thus both the master and the disciple got salvation. Om Agyana Timiranda Shyagaranjana Shalakaya Chakshura Miritam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Vastaya Bhutaleshi Mari Vridayananda Goswami Niti Namine Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Vastaya Bhutaleshi Mari Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Saraswati Devam Gauravani Pracharine Nevisecha Shunyavadi Prashachari Shatayane Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhavayeva Cha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasri Gaura Bhakta Brinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. So Sukadeva Goswami was really keen to start preaching Krishna consciousness, and that's the way it is with all devotees of the Lord. Once they hear the truth about life and the panacea to life's miseries, all they want to do is just get out there and give it to somebody. So this is a really interesting section of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Sukadeva Goswami, the great sage, sat perfectly pacified, intelligent and ready to answer any questions without hesitation. He was fixed in Krishna consciousness. He was completely ready for anything that Parikshit Maharaj wanted to ask him. So because he had listened very carefully to Vyasadeva and knew Srimad Bhagavatam. The great devotee Maharaj Parikshit approached him, offered his respect by bowing down before him and politely inquired with sweet words and folded hands. So the gesture now adopted, Prabhupada says here, the gesture now adopted by Maharaj Parikshit of questioning a master is quite befitting in terms of scriptural injunction. So you humbly approach the spiritual master. You humbly seek to learn from that personality. Offering his respects by bowing down before him and politely inquiring with sweet words with folded hands. So this folded hands, namaskar, working with the Hindu community, you know, this is such a unique thing. It's actually unique to Vedic culture. There's no other organization or people. Namaskar is an ancient Vedic custom of greeting and paying respectful salutations where it's relevant. And even in today's society, people have that namaskar. And even Western people now want to adopt that because it's such a wonderful thing. The two people coming together in a loving embrace, in a sense, it's symbolic. You see it even on award nights, even football award nights and different award nights. Somebody's thankful for getting something and they do a pranam. They don't even know what it means, do they? You haven't seen that? So the general population find it difficult sometimes to offer respects to a senior person. What to speak of offering obeisances, bowing down before someone. Like when we came to Krishna consciousness, or all of us, I guess, the first thing that was really sort of a little bit for a Western mindset, not necessarily for the Indian devotees, but for a Western mindset to actually fall down in front of someone. You know, to actually put your head on the ground, what's worse is just to completely dive flat out in front of somebody. It's like unheard of, you know. I mean, that's like maybe you had a football coach or someone that was your teacher or something. There's no way that you would fall flat at his feet. Do you know what I mean? So for a Westerner, when we first came to Krishna consciousness, that was really a shock to the system. It's like, I've got to bow down to this guy? You know, it's like, I don't feel comfortable with that. But in the Vedic tradition, namaskar, offering one's dandavats to an advanced personality is great. It's very, very well accepted. And Maharaj Parikshit is here doing this to his spiritual master. He is offering, he is completely surrendering himself to the spiritual master. Now you please teach me. I'm subservient to you. I'm your servant to you. So this is a wonderful thing. And the Vedic scriptures provide an interesting information in regards to this offering of pranams. Sometimes it's not found in any other culture except maybe a tradition that's derived from the Vedic culture, like Buddhism. The Buddhists also do this to a certain extent, but not to the same extent as the Vaishnavas or the Hindus do. So there's a quote actually in the that the Vedas they state, and I've mentioned this once before, the pranas, or vital life airs of a person, mount towards when a person who is superior in any of the grounds mentioned above, like either they're a teacher or an elder or something, if one offers the obeisances or respect to that person, one recovers and has a great upliftment of prana. The Vedas say a person who has the habit of constantly offering salutations to a superior person properly gains increase in length of life, knowledge, fame and strength. So by constantly offering our obeisances, by constantly performing this act of humbly, submissively placing ourselves before an elder person or our teacher or our guru, actually is beneficial to our health. And you get these different things. You get increased length, knowledge, fame, strength. Such a person's body and mind will be well tuned at all times and will be put in optimum use. So it's healthy for us to actually offer our obeisances like that. So another quote from the scriptures. The scripture said, quote from the purport, Srila Prabhupada says, the scriptural injunction is that one should humbly approach a spiritual master to understand the transcendental science. This is what's necessary. We have to approach a bona fide teacher of spiritual truth, a mentor. We have to look for a spiritual guide, someone that will actually direct us in the proper way in spiritual life and give us the truth. And there's the classic example, I guess the most important verse, one of the most important verses in the Bhagavad Gita, which is chapter 434. Just try to learn the truth by approaching a spiritual master, inquire from him submissively. So that's that submissive quality. I'm down at the ground here, folks. I'm not challenging you. I'm here submissively serving you. Render service unto that personality. You have to be ready to be a menial servant to that personality. The self-realized souls can impart knowledge unto you because they have seen the truth. So they have seen it. Like Sukadeva Goswami, he's seen it. He's heard the knowledge from Vyasadeva. He's now wanting to pass it on. So he's seen it. He wants to pass it on. So in the purport to that verse in the Srimad Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada says, the path of spiritual realization is undoubtedly difficult. The Lord therefore advises us to approach a bona fide spiritual master in the line of disciplic succession from the Lord himself. No one can be a bona fide spiritual master without following the principle of disciplic succession. So once you've heard it from your spiritual master and you're completely conversant with that instruction, then you can pass it on. So Sukadeva Goswami heard it from Vyas and was then bona fide to be able to pass it on. So that's that disciplic succession. The purport continues, the Lord is the original spiritual master, and a person in disciplic succession can convey the message of the Lord as it is to his disciple. No one can be spiritually realized by manufacturing his own process, as is the fashion of the foolish pretenders. So there are quite a few pretenders that have just made up some sort of a philosophy and are seeking gurus, are seeking followers, disciples. Prabhupada continues, Bhagavatam says, Dharmam Hishakshat Bhagavat Pranitam. The path of religion is directly enunciated by the Lord. The purport continues, one has to approach a bona fide spiritual master to receive knowledge. Such a spiritual master should be accepted in full surrender, and one should serve the spiritual master like a menial servant, without false prestige. Without false prestige, without being puffed up. And this is a thing that I want to develop a little bit more. Satisfaction of the self-realized spiritual master is the secret for advancement in spiritual life. So to satisfy the spiritual master is the secret to advancement in spiritual life. To satisfy the spiritual master. Somehow or other, we have to ascertain what is pleasing to the spiritual master and do that for him. We're talking about the spiritual master, we're talking about his divine grace, Srila Prabhupada, the whole disciplic succession, and our immediate guru. So what pleases Prabhupada is that we propagate this Krishna consciousness movement, that we spread the preaching, we do the book distribution. But in the same token, with our own spiritual master, we try to do some menial service for them, When we get an opportunity, whatever opportunity we can get, we should do some submissive service to the spiritual master. Unless there is submission in service, inquiries from the learned spiritual master will not be effective. So unless you are actually submissive, even though you're hearing the philosophy, it makes no effect to the heart. There's no point to it, as is pointed out. Therefore, when a student is submissive and is always ready to render service, the reciprocation of knowledge and inquiry becomes perfect. And that's what's being said here in the purport by Srila Prabhupada. Both the spiritual master and the disciple are in a perfect situation. The disciple is submissive, he's rendering service to the spiritual master, he's bowing down towards Sukadeva Goswami, he's ready to hear. He doesn't want to hear what the latest football scores are or anything. He wants to hear the necessities of life. He doesn't want to hear the footy scores, if you're asking. What are the essentials of life? Now, this is a critical situation for Maharaj Pariksha because he's going to die in 7 days. And he wants to find out from his spiritual master, what's the essence? What am I here for? Why am I here? What's the purpose of it all? So he's inquiring properly. And spiritual master is giving the proper instruction to him. And that's the Srimad Bhagavatam. So there's a quote, Maharaj Pariksit was now prepared to meet his death. And within a very short time of 7 days, he was to know the process for entering the kingdom of heaven. This is amazing. To find out the process for entering the kingdom of heaven. In such an important case, one is required to approach a spiritual master. There is no necessity for approaching a spiritual master unless one is in need of solving the problems of life. If you're happy in your ignorance, as a lot of people in the material world are, then there's no point to going and approaching a spiritual master. Sometimes you see that. You know, when one of our spiritual masters, or even when Srila Prabhupada was on the planet, you know, people, materialists would come and see Prabhupada and they really wouldn't get the message. They were asking mundane things and they'd missed that opportunity. So it's really important that we are very clear in what we're approaching the spiritual master for. So every morning we chant this wonderful prayer to the spiritual master, prayer by Narottam Das Thakur. Sri Guru Charana Padma Kevala Bhakati Sadma. We're asking the spiritual master, the lotus feet of the spiritual master, the only way to attain pure devotional service. Every morning we come here and we ask Srila Prabhupada, please give me the understanding to develop my Krishna consciousness, to develop my purity. I bow down at your lotus feet with great awe and reverence, bowing down, falling at his feet. Every day we do this. So every day we get that. And the feet of the guru, of the spiritual master, of the guru, is the abode of pure devotion. That's the abode of pure devotion. The qualification of a true spiritual master like Sukadeva Goswami is that they never take credit for their spiritual knowledge. They're grateful to their predecessor. And that's where that parampara comes in. Sometimes in my dealings with interfaith groups, you have a so-called guru or a so-called leader of a particular group, and they take the credit of their spiritual knowledge. Oh yes, I'm doing this. Somebody whistling? That's an acknowledgement, I guess. So, you know, there's the spiritual master or that guru seems to think that it's all coming from him, but it never happens within a bona fide tradition line of disciplic succession. The spiritual master, like Sukadeva Goswami, never takes the credit for what he's about to present to his disciple. Prabhupada was the same. Prabhupada always would refer back to Bhaktisiddhanta. I am just simply the mouthpiece for Bhaktisiddhanta. Prabhupada often praised Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, while he was on the planet, was often praised by both the devotees and both academics of how wonderful he was. You know, like a reporter or someone would come up to him and say, you're spreading this Krishna consciousness to so many places, so on and so forth, you know, and praising and really giving great adulation to Srila Prabhupada. But Prabhupada never took the credit. He never ever said, yes, I'm doing very well, you know. There's one quote that Prabhupada said to Hridayananda Maharaj. He said that, my only credit is then I never tried to take Krishna's position. I never tried to take Krishna's position. That is, and probably he is the only person on this planet that could possibly say that. You never tried to take Krishna's position. It's not that in this material world everybody is trying to be Krishna in as far as, you know, we'll get a couple of extra arms up here and a couple of chakras and, you know, we'll look like Krishna. It's not like that, like Pundraka did. He wanted to look like Krishna. But Hridayananda Maharaj points out that in his lectures that a devotee has a tendency for wanting to take the position of Krishna, even subtly, even a devotee to a certain extent. And it's more on a level of psychological, he phrases this as psychological atheism. So deep down, we still have a little bit of atheism in us, not recognizing or understanding that actually we should give everything and all the credit to Krishna. And Hridayananda Maharaj says that this is as opposed to philosophical atheism. Now, we all know philosophical atheism. That's if you believe, my belief is that there is no God. That's philosophical. But psychological atheism is when we think, philosophically we believe, yes, there is God. But subtly, on a day-to-day basis, moment-to-moment, we have levels of self-centeredness. That is, a subtly thinking that actually I'm the centre of this life. And it goes very deep. You know, and all of us have to struggle with that. We feel at times proud or important. We feel a little bit, we feel that we want to take credit for something. You know, somebody comes up to us and says, oh, you did a wonderful job in the paraphernalia room today, or you did a wonderful service at Gopal's or Crossways, or you made such a wonderful garland or something. And straight away there's like this thing that wells up, oh yes, I know, I did a pretty good job. There's this pride that comes up. And that is taking something from God. That's actually taking something from God. Because you have to always give God the credit, Krishna the credit. So that is psychological atheism, an emotional atheism. It's something that we feel. And Srila Prabhupada could authentically say that actually I never tried to take Krishna's position. Everything was always as a service to Krishna. Everything was always as a service to Krishna. He never took the credit for anything. I'm just simply the humble servant of my Guru Maharaj. Always having this mood of being flat at the feet of the Guru. It's only by the Guru that I'm able to do these things. So this is what we have to try and emulate. And it was interesting the other day that on Facebook, Bhaktin Jess is not here at the moment, she posted this interesting article. Did anybody see this on drug addiction? On drug addiction? Yeah, you saw it? It was really interesting to read that. And what drugs can do, how they influence our lives, you know, if you're a drug addict. They destroy and betray a close friend due to their addiction. So even close friends can't be trusted, family members. It was very interesting that she read that, and I was thinking about it, and in a way our position also in this material world, we are, if we're behaving in a way of lust, of covetousness, sometimes it can be animalistic, which is basically not for a devotee, but subtly, we have subtle lust in form of vanity, in the form of showing off, big noting ourselves. These are subtle things that we have to be really mindful of. And, you know, when someone says, oh, you did this thing so well, you know, then you feel a rush, a feel of release, a sort of a euphoric feeling. And that euphoric feeling is actually a physiological reaction. There's something happening. The doctor is coming in a minute, Mahatma Prabhu, and he'll explain it also, that when you actually get some adulation, someone puffs you up or builds you up, there's actually a drug that is manifest in your body called endorphins. It's a rush. It actually feels good. That sometimes you want more of it. You know, someone has praised you and you think, wow, that felt really good. I'll have to do that again. So these sort of things we have to be on guard against. We have to watch against. And this is an attachment or an emotional attachment to something like that. Very subtle things. So we have to check ourselves at all times. So it's a chemical addiction. So drug addicts need the same. They need a drug both physically and emotionally. So this thing satisfies us. This subtle lust satisfies us. When we come under the spell of the drug, we take something, we take credit for something, and we're proud or we have some self-aggrandizement, we feel somehow big about ourselves, we're just showing off because of lust, then what we're doing is actually we're betraying our best friend. Our best friend is Krishna. Krishna is seated within our heart. Krishna provides everything for us. Krishna, in actual fact, has given us even our very existence. So when we actually turn away from Krishna by becoming proud, by becoming puffed up, we're actually turning away from our best friend. And we betray him due to our addiction to subtle lust. So this is really, really something that we have to work at. Rilai Nandamaharaj says, well, we have to follow Prabhupada's formula, Prabhupada's International Society for Rehabilitation. He calls the Prabhupada Society for Rehabilitation. You know how you have rehabilitation programs for drug addicts? Well, the temples are actually rehabilitation programs for people with this drug addiction of self-centeredness. And there is a process, you know how all these different drug clinics have process, the 12-step process, so on and so forth. Vidyananda Maharaj says there's a 16-step process. Anybody know what that 16-step process is? Chanting 16 rounds. So Krishna consciousness, the ISKCON temples are hospitals. We're here to fix that up, that addiction up. So Srila Prabhupada can rehabilitate us if we follow the process properly. And that process is first thing in the morning, kevala bhakti sadhan. We have to offer our obeisances, give up our pride, give up our vanity, give up our nonsense self-centeredness, and just give everything to Krishna. Just surrender everything to Krishna. And struggling with that, to hold on to that, always keeping in mind Krishna's the source of everything, and everything should be offered back to Krishna. So if someone is giving you praise or someone is glorifying the work you do, it's not that you falsely have to say, oh no, Prabhupada, all Krishna's mercy. And subtly inside you still think, yeah, not bad. We have to give that up as well. So we have to genuinely just, again, you do this pranam. Thank you very much, Prabhupada. And then you understand inside, emotionally, this is all Krishna's mercy. It's all Guru's mercy. So those are the things we have to do. We have to hold on to the lotus feet of Srila Prabhupada and his pure representative. We have to literally hold on to his lotus feet. Not that you grab a hold and just walk around with your spiritual master. We have to hold on to his lotus feet. We have to capture his lotus feet. And those that do, those that actually take the meaning of Sri Guru Charana Padma, every day into their heart, that I will take the message of Guru into my heart, I will render service to him, I will be submissive to his wish, I just want to serve him. Those that are doing that are winning the fight against Maya. This is such a wonderful thing. If we simply do that, then gradually we're able to come to the platform of Kevala Bhaktis Padma Sadhana. There's a great challenge. This is the great challenge of human life. This is the great challenge of human life. Maharaj Parikshit was at that point. He only had a few days left to live. He was at that point and he wanted to surrender everything. Now we don't know when we're going to have, whether we have 7 days to live or 97 years to live. We don't know. It could be at any stage that this could be taken away from us. Sometimes, if you're a little bit hypochondriac like I am, sometimes you feel something, you think, uh-oh. Is that a sign? You know, you may have a headache and you go, oh God, is that a tumour? Am I about to go? Or you have indigestion, you know, you've eaten a lot of prasadam, you know, and all of a sudden you have a reflux and you feel a little pain in the chest and you think, oh! That's it. Go to the bottom of the tongue. Instead of getting some deep congestion or something and having something. So, but we have to. We have to be mindful that death can come at any moment. We may not be as lucky as Parikshit Maharaj waiting for his death to come. He knew. But we don't know. We really don't know. And it does, you know, sometimes we have this thought that perhaps, you know, a devotee, you know, they'll slowly slip into a comfortable position. The devotees are around them and they're chanting, and I'll slip away and go into the spiritual world like that. It may not happen like that, even for a devotee. A dear friend of ours, just recently we were reviewing some of our old plays, and a very dear friend of ours, Puri Prabhu, was on one of the tapes, and it just reminded me of how he passed away. And his death was sudden. He was doing Sankirtan. He was on a marathon. He'd been going all day and all night, and he was tired, and he was in Tasmania, and he was driving, and he must have spaced out a little bit, moved on the wrong side of the road, and a big logging truck just ran straight over his car. And he's dead. So, I mean, it can happen. And we have to be prepared. How do we prepare? How do we win the fight? By holding on to the lotus feet of our Guru Maharaj. Holding on to the lotus feet of Srila Prabhupada and his representative. That's how we actually win the fight. That's when we prepare ourselves. And that's a great challenge of human life. Like Maharaj Parikshit, we have our challenges. Death is facing us. And our material drug addiction is a reality that binds us. Each one of us, if we really analyze, each one of us knows when that drug is coming into. Somebody glorifies us, or somehow you feel it. So we have to be able to get rid of that addiction. And in the beginning of our devotional career, it seems reasonably easy. In the beginning of Krishna consciousness, if you get over the whole idea of bowing down to someone and falling on the ground, you know, once that's over and done with, and you're starting to get the idea of Krishna consciousness, and you're starting to hear the philosophy, it actually is quite a euphoric experience. It's quite unique, because it's so different from anything that's out there. And you're getting the mercy of the Guru, and you're getting this whole new information about life, reincarnation, and Krishna, and God is a person, beautiful deities, and it's all really, and then you're just euphoric. I remember in the early days, I mean, we were so euphoric that we were chanting 35, 65 rounds, you know, that's all we wanted to do. Wasn't it, Bhakti? Day after day, we'd get up early and earlier, let's get up earlier, let's get up at 2 o'clock. Chant, you know, and we'd chant and chant and chant, and I'd come home, I was the only one working in the household, and Bhakti also. And I'd come home and my godbrothers would say, oh, I chanted 64 rounds today. And another one said, I chanted the whole day. I think I did 108. You know, and I'd be going, well, I've only chanted 34, you know. And we really got a pleasure out of chanting. It really was such a buzz. It was so good, you know. It was so euphoric. So what happens is Krishna gives us a little bit of a bonus booster. You know, when you join these frequent flyer points and all that kind of stuff, you get a bonus. They give you extra bonuses. If you join now, you'll get extra bonuses. So Krishna does that to us too. He gives us an extra bonus in the beginning of our devotional career. But as you get older, and I mean older, 30 years, still doing the same thing, the initial experience of that euphoria, you still have a mindset of that, but the actual experience starts to wear off a bit. And what happens is you start to reach a cruising altitude, and leveling off. And it's then when you really have to, that's when the real work begins. That's when all those subtle little nuances of self-centeredness, of vanity, of subtle lust, that's when you have to start working at them. And it's for all of us. It's a long journey. You know, sometimes you have advertisements that say, you know, if you just do such and such, you will achieve your goal very quickly. And so it is also with Krishna consciousness. You know, when we even do it ourselves when we're preaching. We get a new person and they say, well, you can be Krishna conscious in a minute. A very short period of time. If you follow this process, you'll become a pure devotee very quickly. But actually, it takes a long time for most of us. It takes a long time. A lot of sojourning within, a lot of analysing within, a lot of developing our Krishna consciousness within. You know, and that means we have to really, really surrender to Guru. As is pointed out in this purport, that is the only way. And if you're serious about becoming Krishna conscious, as Parikshit Maharaj is, then you have the qualification to approach a spiritual master. So this surrender to Guru, this song by Narottam Das Thakur, Sri Guru Charana Padma, Kevala Bhakti Sadhana, the lotus feet of Srila Prabhupada is the abode of devotion. Really, Hridayananda Maharaj again points out, this is a really strange word. Sadhana means abode, or comparing devotional service to a residence. Isn't that amazing, Sanskrit word? To be the abode of devotion. Alright? So it's like a house of devotion. And Lord Krishna says also in Bhagavad Gita in chapter 10, in chapter 12, Krishna says, just fix your mind, this is chapter 12, text 8, just fix your mind upon me, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, engage all your intelligence in me, thus you will live in me always. You will live in me always without doubt. So this is Krishna's, again, you know how different people have different products and they guarantee you, if you do this, we guarantee you, you'll meet the mark, you'll attain this, you know. But Krishna here is also saying that throughout Bhagavad Gita, he gives us this guarantee all the time, without doubt, Krishna is saying, you will live always in me. So Srila Prabhupada's purport on this is, one who is engaged in Lord Krishna's devotional service lives in direct relationship with the Supreme Lord. So there is no doubt that his position is transcendental from the very beginning. A devotee does not live on the material plane. He lives in Krishna. He lives in Krishna. So what does this mean, to live in Krishna or the lotus feet of Guru? Sadma, to live in the lotus feet of Guru. To live in pure devotion, to experience being Krishna conscious. It's like a whole thing, to live in a spiritual atmosphere. You know, and the temple is such an atmosphere. You know, when you come to the temple, it's like you're hit by the spiritual atmosphere all of a sudden. And then you come into the temple room and it's even more intense. Boom! The spiritual atmosphere. It's nothing like it. I've said before, when we travelled through Europe and we went to the different churches and that, yes, it's a little bit there. But then when you go to the temples of the devotees, it's like, boom! The spiritual atmosphere is there. It's a wonderful thing. And even if the temple is a very small temple, like it is in Amsterdam, we were just talking to Prana about Amsterdam, it's just a small little temple, little Gaurnitai deities, you know, but you come in there and it's like, whoosh, out of the material world into the spiritual world. So you're living in Krishna. Everything is part of Krishna. And it's a unique atmosphere which is intensely spiritual. Sometimes you have it, you know, like I bring interfaith groups to the temple here. You know, and you give them a bit of a, and you must also do that, don't you, Swarup? You give a little spiel over there about Krishna consciousness, and then for the finale, they're already overawed by, wow, this is really far out. They don't know what's going on, really. It's just like, whoa, wonderful. And then you take them into the temple room. Faces just go, and they sort of draw their breath and they sort of hold it and they go, my God, you know, it's like a real stunner, isn't it? You have that? It's really beautiful. How beautiful is this place? So that's that spiritual atmosphere. That's, they're coming into Krishna. They're living into Krishna because the temple room is not different from Krishna. Our homes should also be like that. Our homes should also be the residence of Krishna and imbibe a spiritual atmosphere. Not all the time we can come to Krishna conscious to the temple. Sometimes we have to come, we have to stay at home. And so our homes should also be a temple, a spiritual environment. So thereby, you know, we always advocate that a grihastha should have a space or a room put aside which is just for Krishna. He gets the best house, the room in the house. And then that's the place where you meditate, where you chant your rounds, and fill it with that spiritual atmosphere. And then even you get relatives coming over who are not in any way Krishna conscious, have nothing to do with Krishna consciousness, yet they come into that room and they're won over. Wow! It's just really beautiful. You know, there's not the big screen TV and the couch chairs and everything, but it's very austere, but there's beautiful Krishna on an altar. I go, wow, that's really nice. Even my old mother used to come in, and this is her saving grace, actually. She just recently passed away. But her saving grace was, when she would come to our house, she would stand in front of the deities, and with her understanding, she would look at the deities, grasp her hands like this and go, "Hello, deities," in a sweet voice. So she saw Krishna there, you know? It's just so wonderful. So our home should also be filled with the spiritual atmosphere. Should be filled with the spiritual atmosphere. And having a temple room in the house is the best. If you can afford to do that, that's the best. So we have to live in the residence of pure devotee. And then when we're in that atmosphere, we're protected. Who feels safe when you come into this room, into this temple room? Do you have any anxieties when you come here? It's all left outside. Ah, I'm home. Spiritual atmosphere. Vaikuntha. Actually, free from anxiety. We're in Vaikuntha. There was recently, as I said, my mother passed away recently, last Sunday. And we had a wonderful opportunity leading up to her passing away that we could go in and chant for her, and we sprayed the place with Ganges water and sacred dust of Vrindavan, and Mum was sort of dipping in and out of consciousness. But we had the opportunity to bring that spiritual atmosphere to that ward. And those of you that have had loved ones pass away and devotees pass away, you notice how when you bring the holy name to a ward and you start placing these sacred elements of Krishna consciousness in that ward, that the atmosphere completely changes. Completely changes. All of a sudden it becomes a very peaceful place. Even we can notice it on my mother, that prior to us coming in, when my brothers and sisters were there and they're talking about the footy and this thing and that thing around her, and they're respectful, but they don't know any better. You know, there was a certain anxiety in the air in that room. But then Bhakti and I would go early in the morning and late at night when they weren't there, and we'd play some really nice meditative Krishna conscious CD, and we would chant our rounds and we would read from Krishna book and Bhagavad Gita, and all of a sudden the atmosphere changed. The atmosphere completely changed. And sometimes the nurses would come in and they go, ooh, that feels nice here. You know, and they don't even know what's going on, but on a subtle level they feel it. To the extent that when we left, they kept playing the same CD over and over and over again because they felt that spiritual atmosphere. And then the final thing, when my mum actually passed away, we quickly got a call and Bhakti and I went in, and I had an opportunity I asked my brothers and sisters, would you mind very much? I'd like to say some prayers for my mother. And so I prayed some Vaishnava prayers over her, just silently, but just to her, to tell the soul it's okay, you can go. And as soon as I started, we had the CD on in the background, as soon as I started, I folded my hand, I asked permission from everybody, and the tape was going, the CD was going, and I asked permission from everybody, could I say a prayer for my mum? Yeah, you could please say a prayer. And so as I started, and I was internalizing a prayer for her, the CD went, Samsara Dhavanadida Loka. So again, it was the Guru was there, welcoming and bringing her, you know, the ocean of mercy. So, the spiritual master delivers us from this material affliction of the world and extinguishes the blazing fire of material existence. He can destroy it all. We just have to hang on to his lotus feet. His or her lotus feet. The spiritual master is either Diksha Guru, Shiksha Guru. You know, we have to really, really serve the spiritual master. Stay at the lotus feet of Guru means, yes, I'll fall at his or her feet. Literally, because one bows down or prostrates oneself on the floor. One places oneself under their power. You know, this was one of the things that always used to freak us out when we first came to Krishna consciousness. When you bow down to someone, when you lay flat in front of someone, they can kick you, they can stand on you, can do anything, you know. You're at their power. And so this is that submissive attitude. Samaraj Parikshit bowed down to Sukadeva Goswami. It means to be submissive, to surrender, to always remain under their authority. To remain under their authority. The sage Sukadeva Goswami sat perfectly pacified, intelligent, and ready to ready to answer any questions without hesitation. This is what we're learning from the shloka today. Our whole lives are authorized by Guru if we follow correctly. Our whole lives are authorized by God. Following their instruction to please the spiritual master in our own unique way. We're all individuals. We're all individuals and we all have our way of pleasing the spiritual master in whatever gifts Krishna has given you in this lifetime. You utilize those gifts in service to the Supreme Lord. And whichever way we can. And the reciprocation from our Guru and the disciplic succession is that we learn the process for entering into the kingdom of heaven, as is pointed out in the purport here. Just like Maharaj Pariksit, we get the understanding to enter to the kingdom of heaven. So we have to prepare for our death, and in the same token we have to be really mindful to stay at the lotus feet of Guru, because that is the all in all. And this is what's being pointed out here quite dramatically in this first part of the appearance of Sukadeva Goswami. Are there any comments or questions at all, Prabhu? Yes, Prabhu.
Endorphins are a natural feeling that we physically feel in our body.
Yeah.
So related back to the psychological atheism, where we try and deny that. Like, if somebody says, oh, you've done well today, and you might mentally feel that. To me, my own personal experience, and now that I've learned the lesson today, and thank you for that, I'm going to take people to work on passing that and saying thank you, I know it's not my feeling. But if somebody really puffs you up where you can physically feel it pumping through your body, it's a physical sensation, how do you then deny that? I mean, are we meant to deny it? I mean, maybe I've misinterpreted, so I'll just seek clarity here, please. Are we to deny our body, our natural body's feelings? Because feelings are a natural process of being a human being, so how do we deny our feelings? But more importantly, how do we deny that physical sensation that goes through the body?
Yep. Again, by offering it to Krishna, offering it back to your Guru. Right? That's the same as, say, for example, you're taking prasadam. Right? Prasadam can be really tasty. Now, you know that Krishna has sanctified that foodstuff, so your stomach is satisfied. It's a wonderful feeling. So in the same way, if this euphoria comes over you, if this endorphins actually well up in you, you have a choice of free will. You can actually take the credit for yourself, which is self-centeredness, or you can offer it to your spiritual master. The feeling will still come, but you just direct it to your spiritual master. You say, thank you, I feel great, thank you. It's only because of my spiritual master. And you don't have to give it lip service even. You don't have to. It has to be something internal. You realize that it's dwelling up in you, and then you simply, again, think of the spiritual master. That is why Prabhupada has set this structure up of this morning program. Of first thing that when we wake up, we give glory to the spiritual master. We do our service, our deity worship and so on. Then we worship the spiritual master again. It is constantly remembering that we are nothing without our spiritual master, without Srila Prabhupada, without the disciplic succession. So when this natural thing arises in you, you have free will, you can say, yeah, I'm pretty good. Or you can say, thank you, my dear Lord. Thank you, Srila Prabhupada. Thank you, Gurudev, that I'm able to do this service for you. I only did it for you. And you don't have to make a show of it. You just pranams again. Thank you. But internal, it's all internal. It's working on yourself internally. It's the most. Is that okay? Yeah, for me.
I think as young devotees, even as young persons in the community, often we're not aware of how the physiology of our body actually works. So, you know, like you said before, it takes time to figure out how things happen, and it takes time to
Yeah, good point. But
so again, you know, like I know we've often heard lectures on, say, for example, if you have, you know, lusty desires, and you know, what we're taught to do is as soon as that desire comes into our mind, to stop it, to change that focus from that desire onto, you know, service, change the thought from desire of a selfish thing to performing service. So then what you're doing is, before you allow that to well in up in you as a feeling, because that feeling is only coming because you're dwelling on that thought more and more and more, that's when that feeling sort of, like you said, becomes a rush. Right? So if instead of dwelling on it, if we can, like Prabhu said, you know, offer it straight away to the spiritual master, you're taking the thought off, you're taking the ego out of it. Right? Instead of staying with it and, yeah, pretty good, yeah, actually, you know, yeah, it's right, actually, pretty good. Like, you're staying with it, you're building that emotion and then that feeling, then the endorphins start happening. So instead of doing that, if you surrender that straight to the mercy of the spiritual master, then you're getting your ego out of the way and you're allowing, you know, then the spiritual master to take credit. Because really what it is yes, you're performing the service, but it's only possible because, you know, without
spiritual master,
you wouldn't be here doing
so. Thanks, Bhakti. Any other comments or questions? Jai Prabhu, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.